Fellow conspirators, LG Grande here with you on Liberty Conspiracy Audios, the adjunct to the Liberty Conspiracy radio program. You can find our podcasts at Podomatic and at iTunes. They're free. Just look up Liberty Conspiracy. You can also find our Facebook page that is, of course, available at MySpace. And just check us out over on Facebook. Just look us up under Liberty Conspiracy. Opening up this program, just want to let you know that this combines two programs which really... I think tie together very well. I've saved this radio content just for this time. Why? Because I could see something like this coming. In this program, I've put together content that explains what the term petrodollar means. And I did this a couple months ago on the radio and did not put this out on a podcast because I kind of thought there would be some additional information that would sort of combine with this and really show you or show people in the audience who are interested in free markets and freedom and economics and how government screws up the value of your currency if it has any control over that currency. And unfortunately, most governments do. In this case, we talk about the petrodollar, and then you'll hear some follow-up from just a couple, maybe about a week ago, about a breaking story about what Ukraine, the government of Ukraine, has done with its gold. That ties into the United States government's need or attempt to try to prop up the dollar and the U.S. government's actions in order to try to sustain the dollar and its so-called hegemony and overthrow various governments around the world. It's hopefully it all ties in the economics and the geopolitics, as so many sophists use that term. Unfortunately, I've got to use it here. I think you'll see how they tie together. United States international policy of violence in many, many countries around the world tied into the United States' very, very flimsy position, trying to maintain its position, the government trying to maintain its position and the U.S. dollar's position as the dominant currency used for trading around the world. So I hope you like this. This is pretty much universally listenable. You can listen to it at any time. Some of the information is recent information, but hopefully I describe it in such a way that it doesn't matter whether you're listening to this in 2014, 2015, or 2025. It doesn't make a difference. The lessons on economics should stand. And the history about the petrodollar we used to introduce this hopefully will be very constructive for you and give you something to hold on to and use as intellectual ammunition. Okay, we have some songs to mix into this. It won't be a super long podcast. We'll get you right to it. Thank you very much for being part of the conspiracy of people who believe in freedom. Be safe. This one
is not necessarily time-sensitive breaking news, but it's something I wanted to bring up at the beginning of the program, make this more like a podcast. I want to go back to my conversation about, oh, there it is. Yeah, cat people. See, I was saying. And again, this is the really good version of Cat People from the movie. The later version by David Bowie on his solo album wasn't quite as good because it didn't have those really cool backwards bongos that... And it didn't have the Charlie Callis sound, which is a really, really key sound. It's just like the weirdness coming in, you know, it's really cool. So I want to talk about the petrodollar. As I was mentioning, there's a whole setup to this petrodollar thing popping up. We'll give you the info. The background is the supposed gold standard. Now, why am I playing the theme for Cat People? Because it's also known as Putting Out Fire, otherwise known as Putting Out Fire with Gasoline. And then, of course, the sound, which is, you know, the Charlie Callis sound. I don't know if they hired Charlie Callis to do the sound, but it's very cool. And I'm going to continue to play it because I want to get to the Charlie Callis sound. See, it's very important. All my production staff here in the Palatial G Studios are not going to stop playing the song until the voot 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 sound comes, because that, those are my commands. And of course, you know, that's the way it's got to go. So anyway, as I was mentioning, the term petrodollar is something that I think just flies right through us. It's, again, it's one of these oral signature things. It's whatever, you know, it's just the way things are. Oh, the United States dollar is dominant. And we were told a number of things in history classes in the United States, that the United States dollar became dominant after World War II because the U.S. was the only superpower. It was very productive. You know, the workers in America were very productive, and so on and so forth. Well, that is all fine and good. But one of the reasons that a particular piece of currency, a particular type of currency, becomes widely accepted by people is if you have a free market, it is because it will not lose its value. People don't want to get paid in something and then later say, gee, I'd like to go get a loaf of bread with this. Maybe it's a year later, 2 years later, or 3 years later, and find that it's only, you know, its value has gone down 9%, let's say, you know. That sort of thing can happen in hyperinflation instances, like in the Weimar Republic, where people wanted to get paid in the morning so that they could try to buy their stuff by noontime, because they knew that if they tried to use their money later in the day, it would be even worth less. Worth even less. Okay? So, oh, wait. Oh, here it comes. Here it comes. It's the foot. I have to stop. I'm sorry. Here it comes. It's Charlie Callis. This is very important. Yeah. See? Okay, so maybe it's not a big deal to you, but it's cool. See, it's like, it's the weird stuff that people put in songs. It's so good. You know, that has no meaning. It's just this sound. Like, people are sitting there like, hey, David, listen, I got this idea. I got this what thing, and I want to put it in. David's like, hell yeah, let's do it. Or people are like, David, man, that song's okay, but the voot-voot-voot sound that you put in there. And David's like, no, we're keeping the voot-voot-voot sound. Maybe it was his idea. And you're like, hey, wait. That song needs something. I want voot-voot-voot in there. You know? It's like awesome. It's sort of like the Hey Ho guys and all those rap songs when they talk about seeing, like, scoring with a woman or seeing a girl's booty. It's like, hey, ho! It's like they're just the guys that they get hired by, like, all these rap stars and, like, man, you know, this song needs something, dude. What does it need? Wait, how about the Hey Ho? Yes, the Hey Ho guys! We need the Hey Ho in there. Hey Ho! And that's it, man. I mean, you got... Oh, wait. Here comes. Wait. I'm sorry. I'll get to the substance in a minute. I gotta hear Book. Yes! Did you hear that? That was awesome! What? Oh, man, so good. Freaking Bowie. Yeah, it's just good. Anyway, I don't know. I just like the tune. But anyway, my brother loves the Charlie Callis thing, you know? I don't even know, what was Charlie Callis ever on other than, like, you know, Match Game and, you know, and write down the word boob as an answer all the time. Went boom, went with Gene Rayburn with that funky weird like microphone thing. And it was maybe Hollywood Squares or like an episode of Love Boat or something like that. Like who, like he and like J.P. Morgan and Brett Summers and stuff. Like who were those people? They were just all on game shows and they made these guest appearances on the, those little anthology shows. But anyway, all right. So the petrodollar, as I was saying, so the dollar was supposedly tied to a certain amount of gold back between World War II and the 70s, but it really wasn't. Because they kept printing more money. And savvy people started to say, whoa, dude, time out, man. You know, if I hold on to this, I'm going to be able to redeem this for less and less gold. So I think I'm going to redeem it now and get the gold, which is what people started to do. When the U.S. government officials, like during the Nixon administration, started to recognize this, especially after all the insane spending of the Johnson administration,
the war on poverty, man.
Oh, geez. They were like, uh-oh, we're in trouble. This is not good. So they basically had to go off what was really not a gold standard, but they called it a gold standard. So if any teacher, if you're a student and you hear everything, the United States was on a gold standard, they're like, excuse me, you don't know what you're talking about. It really wasn't a gold standard because it really wasn't fixed, right? Because they kept making more money. Okay, so when they went off the gold standard in 1974... Nixon made a deal, and I didn't know this until I got an email from Simon Black from Sovereign Man. It's a website. It's sort of, you know, like gold and stuff like that. He noted that in 1974, Nixon struck a deal with Saudi Arabia in exchange for, and this is where we get the military-industrial stuff, and it shows just even more of the ties with the U.S. between the U.S. military-industrial complex and politicians and the Middle East. In exchange for weapons and protection, the Saudis would sell their oil for U.S. dollars only. So what that meant was they would only accept U.S. dollars, then reinvest those dollars back in the United States. This was a matter of life and death for the dollar at the time. Nixon had closed the gold window 3 years before, and a massive devaluation of the dollar ensued. Ensuring that the world's most traded commodity would be priced and settled in U.S. dollars was absolutely critical in propping up the currency. Yeah. We'll return and show what fallout has come about. Rolling along, Liberty Conspiracy Radio on the Liberty Radio Network, and I want to thank Stephen Smith for noting that he was listening. Thank you, Stephen, very, very much. And I want to note to the listeners. I had to wait there. I wanted to note to the listeners that if you get the opportunity, head to his website. It is very informative, a very, very good website to understand economics and the way politics and politicians manipulate and degrade the functioning of proper economic relations between free people. It's just so important to read these things and spread the word about them, please. It is abeginnersguidetofreedom.wordpress.com. Just look up A Beginner's Guide to Freedom and you'll find it. A Beginner's Guide to Freedom, all one word. Amazing essays, excellent stuff. And he's got a terrific quote from Frederick Bastiat, which is right on the front. You can't beat it. And you can always email him as well. I'm Gardner Goldsmith. Nice to have you here. I want to get back to that music theme stuff. This, of course, Money from Pink Floyd. Yes. Which is perennial anytime we're talking about the dollar or monetary exchange, that sort of stuff. But if people think that economics is separate from political philosophy or philosophy, moral philosophy, they are incorrect. As someone once noted, the difference between ethics and philosophy is the difference between a man who knows that it's wrong to cheat on his wife and a man who knows that it's wrong and doesn't cheat on his wife. So ethics is a man who knows it's wrong to cheat on his wife, but still might end up doing it. And morality is a man who knows that it's wrong to cheat on his wife and does not do it. It's internal versus internal and expressed and actuated. So we're talking about moral political philosophy here and what that means. And it should always be moral, because we're talking about the so-called polis, which is a group of people interacting under the auspices of the state, which is unfortunate, or under the control of the state. Society is different than the polis. Society is composed of the voluntary interactions that you and I create ourselves. It is anarchistic. Society, by definition, is anarchy, inseparably tied. It is anarchy. Now, the exchange of money from one person to another for a product, services, whatever it is, in a peaceful transaction, voluntarily agreed to, is anarchistic. And it is society, not socialism, of course, society. So, when we're talking about money and economics, we are talking about society and freedom. And unfortunately, politics continually tries to get in there and interfere. So I was mentioning that I was talking about the so-called petrodollar. And the petrodollar came about in 1974 when Richard Nixon made an agreement with Saudi Arabia, and the other OPEC countries followed. And I was unaware of some of this history until Simon Black from Sovereign Man sent this out. Now, Sovereign Man, sometimes, you know, I look at it, and they're always trying to prognosticate about what might be coming around the bend economically and things like that. They're very much in favor of, you know, holding on to gold, getting away from currencies that can be manipulated by politicians and central banks and you know, the treasury departments of various countries. And I think that's excellent. But I learned something from Sovereign Man, as I mentioned, that in 1974, after the Nixon administration went off the so-called gold standard, because they were essentially forced to, they made a deal with Saudi Arabia. They said, okay, we want to make sure people are still using the dollar. So what is a commodity that we can sort of tie to the dollar and essentially kind of prop up the dollar to make everybody still want to use the dollar and still make our T-bills, because the U.S. is going into massive debt, worth something and attractive to people. So what is that? They tied it to oil. They got an agreement from the Saudis that in exchange for weapons and protection, the Saudis would sell their oil for U.S. dollars, then reinvest those dollars into the United States, of course, buying bonds, things like that. But it also gave the dollar a very strong position. Now, what has been happening recently? And by the way, he said ensuring that the world's most traded commodity would only be priced and settled in U.S. dollars was absolutely critical to propping up the currency. Looking back, it was a brilliant strategic move. The rest of OPEC followed, and this sealed the deal for U.S. financial, political, and military supremacy for decades. Today, oil remains the most widely traded commodity in the world. And since every nation either buys or sells oil, it means that every nation holds U.S. dollars. Ah, but things are changing, aren't they? Rather than just sitting on a pile of paper currency, however, foreign banks, governments, and central banks tend to hold U.S. treasuries, i.e. U.S. debt. This means that the U.S. government has a nearly unlimited supply of foreigners to pawn off its dollars and deficits. Right. The rest of the world toils away to produce things. They work in the fields and so on and so forth. And so on and so forth. The U.S. prints its dollars. However, this is not lasting. As we know, what happened with Saddam Hussein? Saddam Hussein, in the early 2000s, he won support from the U.N. in the early 2000s to sell oil for euros rather than dollars. A little while after that, bye-bye Saddam, former ally to the United States against Iran, right? And, of course, as we have noted here, Muammar Gaddafi. Just shortly before Muammar Gaddafi said bye-bye, unfortunately through United States means, he had decided to start a pan-African currency based on gold and get away from the U.S. dollar. Very big deal. What is happening with Russia? As we say, the major reason that the United States, I mean, this is me theorizing, but I think it seems, it's pretty obvious. The United States is not, the politicians in the U.S. have no interest in freedom or self-determination, so-called. I don't know how people having a certain number of people having a revolution and coming up with a new government as opposed to an old government is somehow self-determination. Self-determination is no government. But the so-called revolution in Ukraine was spurred by, yeah, that's right, Western influences, NATO, the United States, CIA. And weapons were funneled from where? Saudi Arabia, up into Libya, and then from Libya over into Syria. As I mentioned, had dinner with Glenn Jacobs back in 2012, I think it was, in L.A. at a Middle Eastern restaurant. Glenn knew the owner, and the guy came over and sat down with us later, and he's from Syria. He said, hey, listen, there's some bad stuff coming down the pike for the president of Syria. The United States wants to overthrow that government. Now, I don't know how he knew this stuff. People weren't talking about it at the time, right? But he knew it, and he told us about it. So guess what happened? Again, you look at the overthrow in Ukraine. There's a recording of U.S. diplomats discussing whom they were going to pick to lead the country. He's a former IMF banker. He is now the president. Well, yeah, we'll go with that guy. So if you look at the monetary push behind all these things, and you don't have to be a conspiracy theorist guy, I'm starting to realize that more and more of this, if you look at the history of the petrodollar, more and more of this has been done to either prop up U.S. oil interests and strategic interests to facilitate the United States getting oil, or it has been done to prop up the U.S. dollar and the military-industrial complex. And it's amazing. It's really something else when you see this stuff. So I just wanted to give you that information about the petrodollar because it's absolutely fascinating. It's very sad. And as I've mentioned, this goes farther back than that. It goes way back to the end of the British Empire. The formation of certain nation states like Iraq, overthrow of governments like the government in Iran, which was done by the CIA in, what, 1953? Formation of companies like Aramco, and when was that, the 1920s, I think? So the ties between the United States politicians, military, and Middle Eastern politicians are very, very strong, and now I see how a lot of this has been done since the 1970s to help prop up the dollar, which is now failing, and countries are, like Russia are trying to get away from it.
Yeah.
everybody, Guard here, continuing the podcast for you. Following up on our explanation about the petrodollar and the United States government's destruction of the gold standard and Nixon's attempt to try to prop it up through political means, associations with the OPEC nations, particularly Saudi Arabia, I want to now move into some of the actions of the U.S. government, the most recent actions of the U.S. government, to continue to try to keep the U.S. dollar's hegemony viable around the world, and some of the violence that has been incurred and inspired by U.S. politicians, by U.S. covert operations, U.S. military, and the military-industrial complex. You know, that term is bandied around a lot, but you can see how throughout history, especially over the past 20 years or so, the United States government has done a great deal to try to continue to prop itself up and to prop up the dollar. Most recently, we saw the killing of Gaddafi, who had been an enemy of the United States during the Reagan administration, then a friend of the United States, and then when just after he decided that he was going to separate from the U.S. dollar, which was being inflated ridiculously by the Federal Reserve and, of course, the Treasury selling bonds to the Federal Reserve, the United States government spending and spending and spending, creating money out of thin air with the help of the Federal Reserve, which was buying its bonds. The government of Libya under Muammar Gaddafi, Gaddafi decided he was going to start his own African currency. And it was going to be backed by gold. Well, guess what? He suddenly became an enemy of the United States once more, a target. All of a sudden, out of nowhere, he was doing all sorts of terrible things and had to be taken out. This was also a part of one of the planks of the Campaign for a New American Century, which was written up prior to the 9/11 attacks. People like Paul Wolfowitz and Dick Cheney were involved. And a lot of what they had to say in their documents for the Campaign for New American Century, a neocon organization, had to do with overthrowing a number of governments and working towards isolating Iran. Those governments included Libya, Syria, and possibly Turkey, if it was necessary, and then working into – oh, and Iraq was one of those as well. They wanted to make sure they overthrew Iraq and took care of that. And they did that. So you can see this information. You can look it up. It's all verified. It's all cited. It's 100% true. And there's some even scarier stuff that's in part of the Campaign for New American Century stuff, which I haven't seen confirmed yet, but I actually believe it. And that has to do with Dick Cheney. And I've seen the actual writing online, but I don't know whether it's verified or it was just trumped up. Dick Cheney actually wrote a piece, and one of the paragraphs in it talked about how he thought it would be beneficial. This is way back in the early days of the Campaign for a New American Century. It would be beneficial to have modified viruses that would be tailored to go after certain genetic cadres. Oh. I see. Anyway, that's Dick Cheney for you. So, or at least according to the document that I read, and you can look it up as well. So now I want to move into this sort of geopolitical strategy stuff that has been going on. Overthrow of Libya, overthrow of Iraq, overthrow of the attempted overthrow of Syria, and specifically a new wrinkle to this. This is a story that popped up in, let me see, just on November 25th. On November 24th, Zero Hedge reported this, and it has to do with Ukraine. Now, those of you who have listened to the radio program know that we watched very closely as the United States government essentially fomented a revolution in Ukraine starting around this time last year. And also around this time last year, the president of Ukraine, who was the president at the time, Yanukovych, he had gotten $15 billion in aid and gas, an agreement from the Russian government. This was going to pull Ukraine farther away from the NATO circles and more towards the Russian circles. And what do we know Russia and China and India and Iran have been doing? They've been getting away from the U.S. dollar. Okay, so as we saw in the first part of this podcast, the U.S. dollar has been falling apart. The petrodollar hasn't been able to sustain it because, of course, just like they did under the supposed gold standard, they keep printing up useless money. Right. And the nations that are going to get paid back in that useless money don't want to get paid back in that useless money. So what did we see? The Chinese government twice dumped their holdings in U.S. bonds. What has taken up the slack for that? U.S. government agencies have been buying U.S. bonds and the Federal Reserve. They are the two largest holders of over 80% of U.S. bonds, probably up to 90% of U.S. bonds. Okay. The Chinese have dumped them. The Chinese and the Iranians and the Indians are no longer using, and the Russians. The Russians are no longer going to be using U.S. dollars in their trade. The U.S. is very worried that the dollar is going to be dropped by more and more countries as the dollar itself starts to see the inflation of the money supply come through and prices start rising. The folks who have held on to their dollars have been very, very lucky that in other nations like Greece, like Spain, like France, like Ireland, they have had such troubles with holding up their dollar that the EU has been pumping just the way that the Fed has. So the only reason that the U.S. dollar looks relatively good is because it's less diseased, but it's still dying. So now we turn to our analysis of Ukraine. Now, as I mentioned, back in November 24th, towards the last week of November, there was a news story that popped up which really confirmed a lot of our suspicions about how the United States has been manipulating geopolitics in order to try to prop up the U.S. dollar and isolate the Russians. And a lot of this has to do with Syria and with the Ukraine. It has to do with money and gas. So let's look at the recent story that was published by Zero Hedge and also republished by InfoWars. Okay, I'm sort of recreating the radio broadcast. For some reason, the audio that I wanted to save did not save properly. So I'm just going to do this for you in podcast form, go through the information again. And it might be even clearer as I do it this way. So Zero Hedge on November 24th reported something that really set off a lot of alarm bells and confirmed a lot of what we've been saying about the U.S. and its agents and the unscrupulous manner in which it operated in Ukraine. So here is the story, and remember, it ties into the U.S. dollar. Because what did the U.S. do? It helped overthrow Yanukovych in early 2014. Yanukovych, who had gotten closer to the Russians at the end of 2013, they helped overthrow Yanukovych, who was the duly elected, if you want to go with elections, if you're that kind of person, president of Ukraine. And they replaced him with someone they selected who was a former International Monetary Fund banker. Now, we'll give you some of that audio of U.S. diplomat, Assistant Secretary of State for European and Eurasian Affairs, Victoria Nuland, when she got caught in a phone call helping to arrange the new leader's entrance and depose the former president with this hand-selected, Western-selected IMF banker guy. We'll play that in a minute, but first I want to go to this most recent story that just came out November 24th, and then we'll backtrack to all of the evidence that seems to show us that the United States has been working towards this particular result right here, and others that I'm sure will be coming in the future. Here it is. This is secondarily published by, if you want to use that term, by InfoWars, but you can go to the Zero Hedge article if you want to. This is November 24th, a week after Zero Hedge reported that the head of the Ukraine Central Bank admitted in an unofficial, informal interview that Ukraine's gold is gone, all gone. Moments ago, the Central Bank of Ukraine revealed that, sure enough, the gold holdings in the civil war-torn country have tumbled as a result of, get this, a decision in September to increase, quote, the share of U.S. dollars in a reserve basket, or in other words, to sell the gold. Don't just call it that. In fact, as of today, we have a brand new buzzword for gold liquidations, and this is the term that they used in the Ukrainian Central Bank, which is now under the leadership of an IMF banker. The president of the of Ukraine is a former IMF banker who was handpicked by the U.S. government and NATO. Here it is. Can you believe how corrupt NATO has become? It's amazing. They're now calling this optimization of internal reserves. So they get rid of their gold reserves, and they're calling that their optimization of their reserves. Here is the quote from the central bank. The National Bank of Ukraine has, quote, optimized the structure of international reserves. Actually, the whole thing's a quote. This is due to timing structure and international reserves and the external position of the country. National Bank of Ukraine decided in September 2014 to increase the share of U.S. dollars in a reserve basket because the structure of the trade balance of the country is 70.3% in U.S. dollars, 15% in euros. 77.7% of gross foreign debt denominated in Ukraine, U.S. dollar, in euros, blah, 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 blah. Okay, so what are they doing? They're buying dollars with their gold. Now, if that is not a stupid thing to do, I don't know what is. Unless they're going to try to switch off within just a few months and buy the gold again. Dollars rising, maybe they're just doing a spot purchase and they're going to change it over. So this is what they continued to write at Zerohead. So Ukraine's central bank decided to convert its gold into dollars just as the U.S. dollar has been surging to levels not seen in years. Just who says central bankers are bad traders? You know, you're supposed to buy low, sell high, right?
Mm-hmm.
So there's a little bit more here. And while the fate of the Swiss gold referendum may lie in the hands of the Zurich subsidiaries. Okay. All right. So now let's head over to, yeah, you got it, the audio of Victoria Nuland speaking back on February 6th about the change that they wanted to see. The guy that they thought would be a good guy to take over the country, which has nothing to do with the U.S. Constitution, the defense of the U.S. Constitution, or anything. It has to do with trying to isolate Russia, which is trying to get away from the dollar, and trying to stop Ukraine from going in the same direction. They overthrew the government of Ukraine to keep Ukraine away from Russia, to keep Ukraine from buying Russian gas, to keep Ukraine buying and connected to the U.S. dollar, and this is exactly what they've done. They just traded off all their gold for U.S. dollars. Insane. And here is Victoria Nuland caught on an audio recording. Now, you can't say caught on tape anymore. It's all digital. Caught on an audio recording February 6th talking about replacing the president of Ukraine with their selected guy, Yats. And what's Yats' name? His name is Yuli... What's his name here? Yatsenyuk. Yatsenyuk. That's it. It's Yatsenyuk. Here we go.
I think Yats is the guy who's got the economic experience, the governing experience. He's the guy, you know, what he needs is Cleach and Tony Book on the outside. He needs to be talking to them four times a week, you know. I just think Cleach going in, he's going to be at that level working for Yatsenyuk. It's just not going to work.
Yeah, no, I think that's right. Okay, good. Well, do you want us to try to set up a call with him as the next step?
My understanding from that call, but you tell me, was that the big three were going into their own meeting and that Yats was going to offer in that context a three-way, you know, the 3+1 conversation or 3+2 with you. Is that not how you understood it?
No, I mean, that's what he proposed, but I think just knowing the dynamic that's been with them where Klitschko's been the top dog, he's going to take a while to show up for whatever meeting they've got, and he's probably talking to his guys at this point. So I think you reaching out directly to him helps with the personality management among the three, and it gives you also a chance to move fast on all this stuff and put us behind it before they all sit down and he explains why he doesn't like it.
All right, there's a lot more, and of course, this audio became famous among some of the pop media folks, or at least maybe some of the folks in some of the conservative talk radio circles, because she said F the EU, you know, a couple times. That was a big thing. Oh, how disrespectful, blah, blah, blah. It's like, yeah, okay, fine. They're talking about replacing the leadership of a country, and the president just got elected there, if you want to play the government game. So that evidently didn't seem to register with them, you know. Anyway, so this is, I think, a big deal. When you look at what happened in Ukraine, just a couple reminders. Again, Ukraine had set up some deals with Russia. You can go back to, here's one from December 17th, 2013. Russia gives Ukraine cheap gas, $15 billion in loans. Russia, this is from, let me see, Kyivpost.com. It says, Russia gave Ukraine a steep discount on gas and promised to buy $15 billion worth of the nation's bonds in a deal struck during President Viktor Yanukovych's, now gone, trip to Moscow December 17th. And then all of a sudden, what happened? Bye-bye, as John McLaughlin would say, bye-bye, issue one, NATO, United States government overthrowing Yanukovych. Issue two, the new government, almost a year later, decides to dump their gold and buy what? Crappy U.S. dollars. Is this really why people are so enthusiastic to vote for the great government of the United States to get it to overthrow countries? Here's a little more. Russian President Vladimir Putin said that the new price for Ukraine will be around $268.5 per cubic meters of natural gas, about $150 cheaper than the current price. Guess what? They're not going to be getting that now. This could save Ukraine $3.5 billion per year at current consumption rates of 26 to 27 billion cubic meters per year. Other amendments to the contract include extended terms of payment and the currency in which settlements are made, according to the... Oh, the currency. They're not going to be using the petrodollar. How strange. Weird. Anyway, thanks for listening. I'll leave you with some cool music. I think we've made our point. And if you want to look any more up, feel free. We've got some terminology here that you might want to check out. Check out Yanukovych. Check out IMF banker, now president of Ukraine, that sort of stuff. Check out, what other things? How about Victoria Nuland and Arseniy, that's A-R-S-E-N-I-Y, Arsenio Hall, and his last name is Yatsenyuk, the guy they call Yats, that's Y-A-T-S-E-N-Y-U-K, he's the guy from the IMF that they threw in there. So, there you go. Yeah, great stuff. Great stuff. Be proud. Your dollar is really working. Anyway, hopefully it doesn't sound too sour. We'll leave you with good music, and thanks again for checking out our podcast. We're going to be revamping the website very soon, I certainly hope. Okay, talk to you soon. Be seeing you. Find us at Podomatic, iTunes. Send links out to people. Find me on Twitter. It's at Gard Goldsmith on Twitter. And, of course, the Facebook page for Liberty Conspiracy is always available to you. Be seeing you.